It's time for the Phenology Show. Phenology is the rhythmic, biological nature of events as they relate to climate. And this past Sunday, I and three of my close associates, Scott Hall, Ken Zimmer, and Dan Versaw, the four of us took on a little project here along the river. We thought we'd eradicate the buckthorn that was, growing along the river here. And somebody had beat us to the punch and gone in and cut the buckthorn off, but they hadn't treated the stumps with this product called Garlon, which prevents them from growing back. And so primarily what we ended up doing was digging out stump root crowns with mattocks, and we worked assiduously for for 2.5 hours, sweating and groaning and swinging mattocks like the chain gang. Yeah, that's what it was like. We were thinking that maybe we'd been sentenced to serve, but we did do some damage, and we'll continue to do more damage in the future. But this is a good time to inspect your own property for the presence of buckthorn. And oddly enough, I was at my nephew's place on Pekegama, and we just happened to walk back into the woods a little bit. We were wandering around back there, and boy, sure enough, we found buckthorn there. Just little plants, no big ones, but little ones that were getting a start. And we uprooted those. So now is a good time to go out and search your own property for buckthorn. And if you see a plant with green leaves, check carefully if the leaves are alternate, not opposite, but alternate. If the leaves are alternate, it potentially could be buckthorn. If it has dark brown or nearly black-looking buds on it, and alternate structure, why, pull it up. And if the roots are fine and black, it's probably buckthorn, and you've probably done yourself a favor. And it, I would say, given the situation, that it is better to err on the side of caution. If you pull up a couple of honeysuckles, which seem to be the other plants out there with leaves on them, they are, by the way, opposite branched. If you pull up a couple of honeysuckles, oh well, you know, the honeysuckles will recover. The buckthorn needs to be gotten rid of. And if you have large buckthorn, you need to get a product called Garlon, and it's available in the probably in the local stores. And you can cut the tree with a chainsaw and then paint the stump. Carefully paint the stump with this Garlon, and it will take care of the stump, and that you won't get any re-sprouting from the roots that remain behind. One of the things that we discovered while we were doing this is a beautiful apple that is visible right outside our window here. It's probably a Crataegus, a hawthorn or something of that sort. A wild apple tree. It has bright red fruits on it, and they're very visible. And it brings to mind something that I've talked about a little bit in the past, and that is that birds are a lot like humans, and that they favor those fruits that are full of sugars and fats, and they eat them as quickly as they come ripe, and so do we. Blueberries, raspberries, choke cherries, pin cherries, you know, the blackberries, you know, the ones. And we all kind of get out there and try and pick those and enjoy them. But these other fruits that come ripe don't have the same level of sugars in them, and consequently fewer fats as well, and they decay slower. Those fruits that have high sugars and high fats decay very quickly. They rot away very quickly. And these other fruits, like these apples and high bush cranberry and winterberry, northern holly, some of those fruits, sumac is another one, they don't have a lot of fats or sugars, and so they don't change much over the winter. And birds will come to those as time goes by and enjoy them, eat them. As time passes, you'll see some of those fruits disappearing as the birds become less particular about what it is they're going to eat. And we'll be keeping an eye on our hawthorn out here, and we'll let you know what happens and when on those fruits. And you can watch your own fruit trees to see how the birds treat them. I've been looking around at trees that still have leaves on them, and it, generally this time of year, it retreats to just those few, usually members of the willow family, and typically right now the willow shrubs, those willows that are, you know, swamp denizens, have, oh, maybe a leaf or two left now. A couple of weeks ago, they had this little thatch of yellow leaves at the top, and now that is even gone, and what remains are just maybe a single leaf here or there. Not many leaves left on the willow shrubs. But the weeping willows and the Lombardy poplars and the white poplar, which sometimes is mistaken for a maple because its leaf is sort of lobed, all of these trees still have leaves on them. The weeping willow show the least effects of fall, and they are slightly yellowing now. You can see that they're changing color, and some of the leaves are coming off. But weeping willows are, by and large, still covered with leaves. And part of the reason for this is that the weeping willow, the Lombardy poplar, the white aspen, the white poplar, these are plants that were brought to this area from other growing areas. And they survive here, but they have a different genetic makeup in terms of when they ought to be losing their leaves. They are used to living in warmer agricultural zones. So we're a zone 3 here. They may have come from zone 4 or zone 5 or zone 6. They can survive up here, but they do it in a little bit different way, and so they hold their leaves a little bit longer. Most of the trees that still have leaves on them right now were introduced to this area and not native to this area. So check them out, and a little bit of investigation, and you'll probably be able to figure out who's who out there. Still a few flowers in bloom. Ed Dallas reports from down in the Deerwood area that there are a couple of red clovers still blooming down there, but he said the ones that are in bloom are very close to the ground, and that doesn't surprise me. Dandelions the same way. Almost no stems on these dandelions right now. The separation between the leaves and the flower heads is probably a half an inch, if that. And so you can see a dandelion from time to time. If you get out and look in your lawn, you might see one or two way down low. Common tansy is still yellow. Some of it is still, I guess you would say, in bloom. It's hard to say. I don't think that they're fresh blooms. I think they're just blossoms that are on their way out but haven't completely retired yet. So tansy, red clover, and dandelion seem to be the flowers out there. White-tailed deer, I know the deer season is upon us, and many of you have had opportunities to shoot deer, including our friends from, I think it was Sam Guida said he shot a 6-point buck this past weekend. Good on you, Sam. The rest of us are still looking. Oddly enough, last Wednesday, I came home about 9 o'clock after a meeting here in town, and I saw an 8-point buck cross my driveway. The next morning, I saw, I think, the same 8-point buck out on the fields along Blue Heron Road. And while I was driving into town on the river road, there was another buck, a nice rack. I couldn't see how many points it had, but it had a nice rack. And it was running on the shoulder of the road. And of course, this was last Wednesday. So within a period of 10 hours there, I saw three bucks with nice racks. And and I haven't seen any since. And I don't expect to see too many in the next couple of weeks because they're getting pretty educated out there right now. Those that haven't made a mistake yet are probably getting real cautious about where they're going and what they're doing. It's going to take some serious efforts now to catch up to those deer. Last Friday, I was working out in the yard, and this was after work, and I was doing some yard work, and I heard a couple of trumpeter swans bugling from the lake, and this is typical. I have some pictures from a year ago of trumpeter swans that were down on the lake this time of year, and they come through. They they pause in these small, shallow lakes, and they do a little feeding, and then they'll move on probably down toward, well, there's quite a flock at the Monticello area. There's always a flock that sticks around here in the northern Minnesota that stays on the Mississippi River, both in the Grand Rapids area and in the Bemidji area. We've had reports of trumpeter swans spending the winter. So these big white swans will probably hang around. Saturday, I was driving the mail route, and I saw a pair fly over County Road 60. They looked like they were heading into Hay Lake, which is up there along 49. And so there are still a few trumpeter swans moving around and doing a little feeding in this area. Snow buntings, I saw my first really big flock of snow buntings, probably 30 birds anyway, 25 to 30 birds, quite a number of them flying along in a big flock. And that's typical of snow buntings. Usually we see them in big flocks. This year they seem to move in twos and threes, and I really hadn't seen any great big flocks until this past week, and then quite a large flock. My wife and I were trying to adjust ourselves to Central Standard Time, which meant that we were up probably at 4:30 instead of 5:30 on Sunday morning, and we could hear this barred owl. At least I think it was a barred owl. It was a very strange collection of calls, but Harry Hutchins has told me that the barred owl has quite a vocabulary. And this owl was calling right outside the house, and it was really quite spectacular to listen to it. Quite nice to hear. And on Sunday, I was finally scraped up enough time to pull my sailboat out of the lake, so no more sailing this year. And while I was doing that, there was a loon right on Pacagma Lake, right near shore, and my nephew and I got a good look at this common loon. And got a note from Chad, and Chad said that he had seen a loon as well this past week, and he wondered if it was maybe he was out fishing, and he thought maybe it was a young one that was born late and maybe just hadn't gotten flight capable yet. And I don't know, this loon I saw on Pacagama looked full size, you know, it looked like an adult. I'm sure it was probably a juvenile, but it was full sized, and I'm sure it could fly. And I think, you know, this warm fall, they're probably thinking, why should I leave now? It's perfectly nice here, so I think I'll just stay and continue to feed before I fly out of this area. And I'm sure that some of you who live on some of the larger lakes are probably still seeing some big flocks of loons on the lakes. It's not uncommon this time of year for there to be 10, 15, 20 loons in a group, and sometimes even more as they sort of band together and get ready to move south. Final notes, insects. I mentioned earlier the black fly that Scott caught while we were extricating buckthorn from the riverbank here. And also Randy McCarty, a good friend of mine who deer hunts out at my place, said that the mosquitoes were particularly noisome on Saturday while he was trying to deer hunt. That's the Phenology Show for today. As always, if you have comments, questions, or observations you'd like to share, please send them along. It's time for TalkBack. TalkBack is your opportunity to communicate with us. Maybe you've got a comment you'd like to make, an observation you'd like to share, or a question you'd like to ask. It really doesn't matter. We're just waiting to hear from you. So give us a call. Our number is 999-9876. You can also reach us at email by sending emails to comments@kaxe.org. You can email me personally at jlatimer, that's J-L-A-T-I-M-E-R, at kaxe.org. You can always send us a letter. Our address is 260 Northeast 2nd Street, Grand Rapids, Minnesota, 557. 4444. We did hear from some of you this week, including our Forest View Middle School Bird Club in Baxter. Lincoln, Crystal, and Brock are the reporters this week.
Travis is beginning his fourth year with the club, and he reports seeing lots of woodpeckers, and recently a northern cardinal showed up in his yard.
Molly is seeing pileated woodpecker a lot along the lots of Canada geese flying overhead. Sarah and Sophia are both seeing flocks over 50 wild turkeys in the fields around their houses.
Aaron came in with a report of about 30 blue-gray gnatcatchers in his yard. After a discussion, club members thought it was probably a flock of dark-eyed juncos instead. Some members are still seeing juncos, but their numbers have been reduced in the last week.
Hunter has been seeing a partial albino white-tailed deer on the way to school. He also watched three bald eagles soaring near his home and a female common merganser on the Mississippi River.
For our alumni report, Kevin has built the Chimney Swift Tower for his Eagle Scout project, and Ben was very involved with Minnesota Breeding Bird Atlas, collecting data at his three priority blocks. It is great hearing Sam continuing to send in reports from Gaida Lake.
Mr. Perry had a great observation to share. A great horned owl landed on his feeder and used it as a hunting perch. He saw it take a short-tailed shrew before flying off.
Well, that's our report for this week. See you outside.
All right. Thank you, Lincoln, Crystal, and Brock. That was nicely done. And, you know, the blue-gray gnatcatchers, I think every person who's ever taken an interest in birds has probably had the same experience. You see something and you're not sure. You grab your book and you start in and you find yourself on a page with a beautiful bird that looks quite a bit like what you thought you saw. And so you say, wow, I saw a flock of blue-gray gnatcatchers. But then you begin to look a little deeper and you check the maps and maybe you talk to some friends and it turns out that they were only juncos. But nonetheless, you know, you're looking and that's a good place to start. So congratulations. And yeah, the juncos are sort of declining in numbers. We're seeing a few still in this area and we'll probably see a few more before they shuffle on south, a little bit further south, and spend the rest of the winter. A graduate of the Forest View Middle School Bird Club, Sam Gaida, sends us his report each week from Gaida Lake. And he says, the hawk is still here. There was a thin sheet of ice on Gaida Lake on Saturday morning. I could almost walk on the ice on the swamp. My kind of guy. I shot a nice 6-point buck while hunting this weekend. Congratulations, Sam. Small waterfowl coots on Gaida Lake today. I think I heard a loon yesterday while sitting in my deer stand. A sundog Sunday evening and a very nice sunset. Dad saw an owl being chased by two crows. We are still being invaded by mice. My dad found a dead one in his nightstand at 3 a.m. one recent morning. Some deer ticks are still around. And I saw sundew while in a tag alder swamp looking for deer. Sundew is a insectivorous plant, and I don't know, he probably saw the round-leafed sundew. These are small plants with little fingers that come out of the edge of the leaves, and the plant puts out a little glue on the ends of each of those fingers, and when an insect gets stuck to one of those, can't get away. And there's a sort of an enzymatic reaction there, and the plant is able to access the nourishment of the insect inside and use that to augment its diet. And it's a pretty amazing little thing that goes on with those little sundews out there. We heard this week from Mrs. Dallas' fourth grade class at the Pine River Bacchus Elementary School, and Amber is our reporter.
This past week, we noticed the tamarack tree's needles changed to a brown and started falling off the trees. We really enjoyed it, the beautiful golden color this fall. I noticed busy squirrels throughout the week. Shana, Harley, and I noticed frost on the ground every morning the last week. Most of the students noticed that the sun went down earlier and the sunrise was earlier. Ryan and Joe report that the days are getting shorter. Gabriella saw a red fox the morning of November 8th. Deanna saw five geese on November 5th. Emma reports hearing a black rub its antlers against a tree on November 7th. She also saw marks that looked like a deer had scratched the ground. Austin saw a six-point buck on November 6th at 8 o'clock a.m. Damien saw a spike buck and an eight-point buck on November 6th at about 9:30 a.m. Over the weekend, Shana saw four deer and Kayla saw five deer. On November 7th, the weather was very warm. Well, that's all we have to report. We can't wait to meet with you later this week, Mr. Latimer. Thanks for listening to our phenology report. Happy nature watching.
Nice job, Amber. Thank you very much for that report from the Pine River Bacchus Elementary School. And yeah, I'm going to be over there on Thursday, and we're going to talk about watching and being good observers. We heard this week from the deer stand. A number of people reported from deer stands this week, but the one that came to my hand most immediately was from Tornado Bob. And he said, I was in the Effie area Sunday not seeing deer, but it was fun watching the birds from my stand. Lots of red-breasted nuthatches were stopping periodically to eat something from the white spruce. Not sure what it was about the spruce, but they sure seemed to be feasting on it. The nuthatches were sometimes followed by chickadees that moved through the area, and they were eating from most of the trees, not focused on the white spruce. The closest chickadee approach was 3 feet away, the closest nuthatch 5 to 6 feet. I must not have been still enough because none of the birds alighted on me. Maybe that's why I saw no deer. A flock of pine grosbeaks flew by. A female hairy woodpecker visited periodically. There were a few goldfinches in the distance. A large flock of Canada geese moved south to a field nearby in the mid-morning and then flew back north at the end of the day. A group of at least a dozen ruffed grouse pecked their way through on a foraging expedition. Since I have not spent much time in tree stands until this year, it's the first time I've seen that. Some of them, the males I suppose, spread out their neck and tail feathers quite a bit and made quite a display. There are quite a few ravens around the area. It's interesting that I hear exclusively crows around my house in Grand Rapids, but as soon as I go anywhere else, I hear exclusively ravens. And a blue jay or two were in the area, and that from Tornado Bob. Our final report this week comes from the Northern Lights Community School in Warba, and Carl is our reporter.
This last week we have seen it's been getting colder. We have ice in our cars most mornings. The lows for this week are supposed to be in the 20s at night. The puddles are freezing over. Alex's mom had a hawk fly through the windshield in the car last week. It was scary, but she was able to pull over. The deer are moving all around a lot more. We have been seeing more foxes on the trail lately. Thank you for listening to the Warba Phenology Report.
Thank you, Carl. Nice job. And I'll be talking to the kids today in Warba about invasive species, most particularly probably buckthorn, since it's fresh on our minds and the scars are still on our hands. That's our talkback show for today. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back again next week.
You're listening to Phenology Plus on KAXE Community Radio for Northern Minnesota, 91.7 on the Iron Range, Cook and Crosby, 89.9 in the Brainerd area, 105.3 in Bemidji, and audio streaming on the internet at KAXE.org. I'm Scott Hall with John Latimer. Coming up, hunter and outdoor writer Sean Parrish explains what deer hunting means to him, and DNR biologist Chell Anderson talks about late fall and winter birding along the North Shore. Phenology Plus is made possible by our listener members and by the Bonner Eye Clinic in Grand Rapids. At the Bonner Eye Clinic, Drs. Bonner, Mariano, and Kincannon have served the eye care needs of Grand Rapids, Itasca County, and the Iron Range for over 45 years. Located at 1542 Golf Course Road, the Bonner Eye Clinic is proud to support KAXE, authentic local radio. We also have support from the Atchison Tire Company in Grand Rapids. Locally owned for more than 90 years, Atchison Tire has offered new tires and repair services for generations of their customers online at atchisontire.com. The Minnesota Women's Woodland Network is a new program intended to help women learn about trees, nature, and caring for the land. It's an informal learning environment that's conversational by nature. Minnesota author Gayla Marty will be in Grand Rapids next Tuesday, November 16th, from 6:30 to 8 p.m. to talk about her book, Memory of Trees, A Daughter's Story of a Family Farm. The event will be at the University of Minnesota's North Central Research and Outreach Center on the east side of Grand Rapids. And there is no cost. Call KAXE for more information about that. Campers and hunters are reminded there's a state law that prohibits bringing firewood into state parks and forests. Transportation of firewood has been directly linked to the spread of the emerald ash borer. That tiny insect has already killed millions of ash trees in the upper Midwest and is moving towards northern Minnesota. Campers should purchase firewood from local vendors in and around state, federal, and county forests and parks. And again, call KAXE for more information. 218-326-1234. For outdoor writer and hunter Sean Parrish, deer hunting is more about the hunt than the killing.
My father had a wry observation about deer hunting. "You wait for days for a few seconds of action," he'd say. Dad knew from decades of experience that Northwoods whitetails never come easy, which is precisely why he loved hunting for them. Dad hunted deer year-round, although he only carried a gun during hunting season. For him, hunting deer was about knowing the animal and the place where it lives, which he would visit throughout the year. It was about the preparation for the hunt, from reloading ammunition, to building deer stands, to oiling his hunting boots. It was about memories of past hunts, from epic snowstorms, to fun with friends, to the many times when his path coincided with a wary buck. It was about eating venison, being with friends, and just as importantly, being alone out there. Never did he head into the woods without the expectation of getting a deer, yet never was he disappointed when, on most days, he did not. There was always another day or another hunting season. A friend of mine puts it another way. He likes to point out that every day you spend hunting and don't shoot a deer brings you one day closer to your next successful hunt. Such an attitude can carry you through the inevitable dry spells which occasionally bedevil every deer hunter. Every now and then, luck runs the other way and you shoot a deer on opening morning, perhaps right at the break of day. For me, such openers are bittersweet, because I enjoy the hunt more than the kill. One opener, I happened to see a distant buck walk across a county road. I had a good idea of where the deer was headed and hustled down a logging trail to intercept it, climbing into an old tree stand built by a bear hunter. I'd barely settled into the sand when the eight-pointer stepped out and then proceeded to walk directly under the tree. The buck wasn't trophy-sized, but he was plump and sleek. For whatever reason, mostly because it was opening morning, I decided not to shoot him. Instead, I just aimed the rifle and silently said, "Bang." My hunting companions thought I was crazy. "You'll pay for that," they said. And they were right. I didn't shoot a deer that year or the following season, and I hunted for 6 days the third year before coinciding with a buck shortly after dawn on a snowy morning. It was a culmination of a dry spell of epic proportions. But you know what? I enjoyed every minute of the three-year hunt. Killing a deer, even a big buck, is vastly overrated. While the point of hunting is to kill something, it isn't what the hunt is all about. Cave drawings and other ancient artworks demonstrate that even our ancestors understood the sum of hunting was greater than the kill. In fact, about the only people who don't seem to get it are the antler-addled nimrods who dominate hunting television and magazines. Sorry, but killing a buck just so you can stroke its antlers and coo over how big they are is just plain creepy. Out in the real world, it doesn't happen that way. Sure, the average hunter gets plenty excited when he or she kills a big buck, but even for a serious hunter, such a kill is an occasional occurrence. Shooting a trophy is not the reason they go hunting. What motivates the average hunter has more to do with living than killing. It's about getting away from the day-to-day grind, spending quality time with family and friends, breathing fresh air, and enjoying the sense of freedom that comes with getting up in the morning and knowing all you have to do for the day is go hunting. Shooting a deer may be important, but not nearly so much as all of the above. It's fair to say a whole lot of hunters buy a license and head to deer camp solely for social reasons. Some may be lucky to kill a deer once a decade. Others are happy to serve as camp cook. A few never make it to the woods. All have fun. For me, deer hunting is about the social aspects and about the wild, too. It usually takes a day or two in the woods before I really settle into the hunt. My senses must adjust to a slower, predatory pace. It takes a while before I can see through the trees, hear the whispers of the forest, or smell the faint but unmistakable scent of a nearby whitetail. Once my senses get to where they need to be, I am truly in another place. Just what that means is hard, if not impossible, to explain to someone who doesn't hunt, or even to some who do. About all I can say is once your senses are tuned to the natural world, you understand what it truly means to be a hunter. My hunting partner, no stranger to that special hunting place, puts it another way. Deer season, he says, is the only 2 weeks of the year when they let you wander around in the woods carrying a big gun. True enough. Hunting is about the opportunity to carry the gun in the woods and not just about whatever chance you may have to pull the trigger. This is Sean Parrish with Points North.
The Minnesota DNR and Department of Agriculture are once again supporting the Hunters Against Hunger program. It enables hunters to donate venison to local food shelves. Hunters must have their deer processed at a Minnesota Department of Agriculture registered meat processor participating in this program. Only entire carcasses with the hide attached can be donated. A list of processors is at the Department of Agriculture website, or you can call KAXE for more information. And due to the increasing popularity of deer feeding, DNR wildlife managers and conservation officers are getting calls about nuisance deer. Deer attracted to feeding sites tend to abandon their natural habitat and congregate in more populated areas. They eat neighboring trees, gardens, flowers, and shrubs, and the DNR urges people not to feed deer. The deer will survive well on natural foods. Deportage Learning Center is located on 6,100 acres of forest land in Cass County between Hackensack and Longville. The center offers a variety of outdoor activities and classes for all ages. Deportage also has over 18 miles of hiking and ski trails, an interpretive center, and educational programs open to the public year-round. Online at deep-portage.org or call KAXE for more information, 218-326-1234. Chell Anderson is a wildlife biologist with the DNR, and she lives in Cook County along the north shore of Lake Superior. And in this conversation with Jay Anderson, Chell talks about late fall and winter birds along the north shore.
Most of our songbirds have gone by. We've bid farewell. The woods will be very, very silent compared to the summertime.
Well, except for the nuthatches and the chickadees.
Yes, right. Well, it won't be absent. It won't be totally silent. But this is the time of year when we're entering what I think of as the deep quiet of our year. And it's not like without sound, but it's pretty different and something to be enjoyed and appreciated. Not everywhere can one enjoy quiet. So most of the songbirds have departed, and you might still see some flocks of juncos, dark-eyed juncos, flitting around here and there. maybe a few Lapland longspurs, flocks of those still showing up. They've been pretty abundant in town and, you know, down along the shore in open places. They're birds of wide open spaces, so that's where we tend to see them. And coming on now and continuing, especially for a while if we don't have snow, are the snow buntings, which are always a real joy to see, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, especially when you're driving down the road and they fly up in flocks all around you. I think we've all had that experience.
Yeah, I hope so, because I suppose it can be annoying if you're trying to get somewhere in a hurry, but they are just beautiful. They're beautiful, warm brown and white with bright white wing flashes when they fly, and they go around in small flocks usually and will, yeah, just kind of go ahead of you down the road, lead the way. Very, very beautiful to watch.
Now, birds like chickadees and nuthatches mm-hmm. and blue jays, for example, they stick around. And
yeah, they do stick around. And there are movements and, you know, more localized migrations of birds moving around and setting up for the winter. You know, birds don't stay necessarily right in the same place at every season of the year. And, of course, some birds that stay in more social groups, they're sorting things out amongst each other and figuring out how they're going to work their terrain over the course of the winter. So, you know, there are movements going on, even of the birds that stay here.
What about the big birds like geese and loons?
Geese and loons, you know, there could be still the odd flock of geese that are going over. Loons should be gone by now. There may be the odd young bird that was maybe late in being born this summer and is taking, you know, longer to kind of get ready and be physically able and capable of taking off. But they want to get out, of course, before the lakes start to freeze, and most adult loons would be gone by now. Might still be the occasional group of swans going by, but probably most common now and what's peaking right now in terms of migration are the large raptors. So the red-tailed hawks, the rough-legged hawks, the northern goshawks, the occasional golden eagle, and eagles, bald eagles. These are the raptors that their numbers in terms of the fall migration peak at this time in the migration. So these are still a great time to be out at those places where thermals are generated on a sunny day to be looking for the big raptors. So that's definitely worth doing. The other thing related to the fall migration that I don't think I've mentioned earlier was that fall, like any migration time, is when we sometimes see very uncommon things. And I haven't made the time to stay really in touch with the details of that this year, but I did hear a couple local reports on a black-billed magpie in the county this year. So that's a fun thing to think about. That's normally a much more western bird that, I don't know, somehow got off on a tangent and was here for a while. The other thing is to look at this time of year for waterfowl, especially sea ducks out on Lake Superior. So things like old squaws and scoters, these are things that we might see anytime now and into different parts of the winter. So these are birds that are from the far north and who come down and end up on Lake Superior. And they're always really fun to see. So it's a good time of year to be looking for the odd thing, you know, that might show up.
But like bald eagles and mm-hmm. some owls, they stay around.
Yes. And some birds like bald eagles are a good example, will only go as far as they need to go. So even snow buntings, you know, they won't stay right here, but they're going to go only as far as they need to go to have a reliable food supply. So
that would apply to these odd or infrequently seen seabirds too. Right,
right? Okay. Yeah. And as long as they can keep themselves going, they're going to be okay, because they can handle the cold, the temperatures, but it's that food supply that's really governing where and how far they go. So yeah, we're going to see eagles around here, and maybe they'll move, depending upon our winter, maybe they'll move down closer to Duluth and a little further south initially, and then show up again in February, or maybe they'll just be here right along.
Jill Anderson is a wildlife biologist with the DNR. She spoke with Jay Anderson from WTIP Community Radio in Grand Marais, and our thanks to WTIP for sharing that feature with us on Phenology Plus. Phenology Plus is made possible by our listener members and by the Itasca Surgical Clinic in Grand Rapids. At the Itasca Surgical Clinic, patients are provided with personal screening, diagnosis, and treatment of a full range of medical conditions, all in a caring environment. We also have support from Dale's Auto Body in Grand Rapids. At Dale's Auto Body, customer satisfaction is based on 25 years of experience. The staff at Dale's is ready and willing to answer questions concerning the repair and estimating process. At Dale's Auto Body, repairs are vital to a vehicle's performance, safety, and resale value. Time now to visit with Eli Sager. Eli is a forester with the University of Minnesota Extension Service, and we visit with him every month to find out what's new at myminnesotawoods.org, a great website with information about all kinds of things pertaining to Minnesota's trees and forests. Welcome back, Eli. Good to visit with you again.
Thank you, Scott. It's good to be back.
Eli, John Latimer and I and a couple of friends spent part of Sunday morning ripping out buckthorn along the shoreline of the Mississippi River, so I can really relate to your focus, one of the focuses on myminnesotawoods.org this month on invasive species. Let's start there.
Yeah, that's great. Good for you guys. Boy, it can be rewarding work, but it's the kind of work that never seems to end in some ways, and the buckthorn is getting more and more common up around Grand Rapids, but boy, down south, it almost seems like a never-ending process trying to control this stuff. But as you say, one of the first event listed in our upcoming events is the Minnesota-Wisconsin Invasive Species Conference that's going on now in St. Paul, and they're covering all kinds of issues related to invasive species, not just terrestrial invasives like buckthorn and garlic mustard and there are many friends out there in the woods, but also aquatic invasives and other species as well. And one of the reasons this is a good thing to talk about now is that the buckthorn is never, there's really no better time than now to try to control the buckthorn. It's easy to see out there. The leaves are still green. Buckthorn is for folks unfamiliar with it, it's pretty much the one understory green shrub left. It holds its leaves longer than most other species, and so it's really easy to see. And this is a good time of year to control it because you can find it if you cut it and you do a very targeted application of a brush killer herbicide right to that cut stump. If you do that right away, that chemical this time of year will be more likely to be drawn into the roots and to be effective. So not only is it easy to find, but control at this time of year can be pretty effective, too. So good for you guys getting out there along the river, and I hope a lot of other landowners are thinking about doing the same thing.
Where did buckthorn come from?
There are two. European buckthorn, the main one that has leaves that almost look like dogwood, came from Europe. That's European buckthorn or common buckthorn. There's another one called glossy buckthorn that is found more often. In fact, you guys may have been dealing with this one down along the river. It's found more often in wet areas. And it's got a leaf that looks a little bit more like alder. The veins are parallel to one another, not to the leaf edge. They go kind of straight from the midrib out to the edge of the leaf. And they don't produce quite as many berries. They're not quite as bad an invasive problem as common buckthorn. But, boy, they can get pretty thick as well. So there are two of them out there.
Okay. Now, another headline at myminnesotawoods.org this month has the outlook for forest biomass availability in Minnesota. I know we've been studying the possibility of alternative uses of wood products and wood byproducts of the harvest. What's this one about?
You're right, Scott. We've been talking a lot. We've heard a lot of kind of speculation and kind of guessing about, hey, biomass, this could be the next big thing. But there hasn't been a whole lot of research into the feasibility. Of course, there's more all the time. But this is a report done by Dennis Becker and his colleagues here at the University of Minnesota on, as you say, on availability. They really looked deeply at not only what is out there, not only what's in the wood, but also the physical, environmental, economic, and social availability. So they're going beyond what's just out there and thinking about, well, what could we reasonably access given the costs of trucking the stuff, given landowners' willingness to provide it to the marketplace, given the equipment and the other constraints that are out there and our ability to just make that happen, to get it to the energy source. So this really is a nice report. It's more technical in some of the content that we put on My Minnesota Woods. It won't be for everybody, but this is again, one of the kind of first best assessments of biomass in Minnesota. And, you know, it turns out that as most people might guess, there is an awful lot of biomass out there. There is more biomass in the woods than we could ever, maybe I shouldn't say ever really use, but that we're likely to ever use. There are some real constraints on ability to get that to the marketplace. It's not a high-margin product. It's not something that a lot of people are going to make a lot of money on. But there are a lot of good reasons to use it. And different people may take different things from this report, but this is the first report that we've seen that really gets us kind of good information about how feasible this whole enterprise is. It's right there on our front page and available for anyone who's interested in looking at it.
Okay. What else you want to bring to our attention that's new at MyMinnesotaWoods.org this month?
Oh, let's see. Keith Jacobson down at the DNR Division of Forestry has a good paper. He took a publication that Charlie Blinn and some others did, an extension here several years ago, on marketing timber from the private woodland. He's got a nice article on timber sales on private lands. So kind of a forestry 101 for those landowners who are thinking about harvesting timber, whether their aspen is starting to fall over, or whether they need to thin a red pine plantation in order to keep it healthy and keep it growing, or for whatever reason. There are a lot of things that those folks need to think about. Most landowners don't harvest timber more than once or twice in a lifetime. Trees don't grow all that fast here in Minnesota. And so there are some things that folks might not think about. And Keith's article does a really nice job of kind of just laying out some of the basics. What are Minnesota's voluntary site-level forest management guidelines? How do you learn more about them? What can a professional forester do to help you? How can you find a professional forester who can help you do it right? What are the different kinds of foresters? How do you find the right logger? How do you develop a good plan for that timber harvest? Really thinking about what you want to achieve from that, how to make it, whether your goals are to make money or to improve the vigor and health of that stand or wildlife habitat, whatever it may be. Keith's article just does a really nice job, I think, of laying out the basic things to think about. And, of course, we got links to all kinds of sources of information for folks to follow up and make connections with the folks that can help them locally and so on. So really a nice article. Of course, we have John's phenology report. KAXE listeners are quite familiar with John, and we're really happy every month to include a written version of his phenology report. So we've got that. Every other month, we feature a logger. We profile a logger. This time it's Brad Rutke from Brook Park, just west of Hinckley. And that's an article that we pull out of the Timber Bulletin, which is produced by the Timber Producers Association. And, again, a lot of landowners don't harvest timber very often. They may not have a chance to work with loggers or get to know loggers very well. And boy, the Timber Bulletin just has a great bi-monthly logger profile. And it's a chance for folks to just kind of see the world from a different lens, kind of see how the world looks to a logger. And these guys always have interesting stories. So we're grateful to TPA for sharing that with us and letting us feature that on our site. What else? We got a quiz every month. This time it's a quiz about what Minnesota tree species has singly compound leaves near the branch tips and doubly compound leaves farther back. There's only one. And lots of stuff on the discussion board, lots of news headlines. It's a pretty full issue this month.
Yeah. Anything on the discussion board jump out at you?
There was a question, I guess not on the discussion board, but somebody posted a good question, in fact, good enough to win our free copy of the Woodland Stewardship book, a question about managing oak wilt. She was down in Sherburne County. Good question about that. There's been really kind of an interesting discussion about acorns as a food source. a few folks are pretty enthusiastic about that, and there's been some good information about that. And we always get questions about, you know, invasive species, about what trees to plant, variety of other things. So, yeah.
Now, wait a minute. Acorns as a food source for humans? Is that what?
Yeah, yeah. Apparently, in some parts of the world, it's quite common. And there's a fellow named Chris Seams who is he actually works for a company. Well, he is a company that sells tree shelters, and he this guy just loves trees. He's got a lot of energy. He's got a lot of interesting ideas. And one of the things, he was the one that posted this idea initially. It seems that what people typically do is to grind up, I think it's white oak acorns. I think you got to boil them to get rid of some bitterness and dry it out, and you cook it, you use it as flour.
So, wow.
Again, not for everybody, but it's great stuff. And the people who do it are pretty enthusiastic about it. So when we talk, you know, our site does feature a lot of content on non-timber forest products, different approaches to harvesting products and using products from the woods. And I really like it when ideas like that make it onto the discussion board. So there's good stuff.
Hey, Eli, leaves are down, hunters are in the woods, but for people who have a woodlot or who want to just go out and visit a wooded area and aren't hunting, or even hunters, is there anything particularly unique about the November woods?
What's unique about the November woods, it's always kind of fun. Like you say, with the leaves down, you can see an awful lot farther. You can see what's going on out there a little bit more. Of course, it's harder to tell what's what in the woods, because without their leaves, trees can be and shrubs can be a little bit harder to identify. But there's just a lot going on out there. Every time of year is a nice time of year to be outside, and this is certainly no exception to that. As you say, whether you're out there just to view wildlife, whether you're out there hunting, whether you're just out to spend some time outside. Of course, it is important this time of year to dress in very bright colors. Just make sure you're visible to those who are out there hunting. But awful lot of fun to be had this time of year outside.
How about pruning trees? Is this a good time of year to prune?
Yeah, whenever trees are dormant is a good time of year to prune. I like pruning. You know, you can have some interesting kind of almost philosophical discussions about pruning. You know, a lot of folks in the forestry community will tell you, well, you know, pruning just isn't worth it. You know, it may or may not add enough value to your standing timber to make it worthwhile in a purely financial sense, especially if you're hiring the labor. But I think that in a lot of ways, that doesn't really apply to family forest situations. You know, again, this is just such a beautiful time to be outside. Now that the trees are dormant, the bark is less likely to slip, so it's you're less likely to accidentally damage trees in ways that really would degrade their value. All those nutrients, you know, when the leaves change color, a lot of nutrients are pulled back into the branches and into the stem of the trees, so when you cut off a branch, you know, fewer nutrients are lost, so the tree will recover and you know, heal that over more quickly.
And, you know, last month I had in my notes to ask you about balsam boughs and the cutting of the boughs, and I forgot. We haven't talked much this fall about the bough business and what it means to Minnesota bough harvesters and their impact on the market for Christmas wreaths and other seasonal gifts. But that's another way that Minnesota forest products are renewable and reusable and also sustainable. Tell us more about the bough business. And is it just balsam?
No, it's not just balsam. In fact, we've got a picture on our site back from a post from January of 2009. We've got a guy named Dave Wilsey, who's an extension educator down in Cloquet. Dave did his master's research on the balsam bough industry in Minnesota. And he's just written a great article. It's called Non-Timber Forest Products, Balsam Boughs. Julie Medke was a co-author on that article. They wrote it together. And, in fact, we've got some photos on there that John Krantz took one. Julie Medke's taken another from a workshop that she did showing somebody using cedar boughs. People use white pine. People use a wide variety of species. But a lot of people use lycopodium, the club mosses, to make wreaths as well. They hold their green color well. There's an awful lot of different ways to do it, and you know, people think of new things every year, it seems. It really is a big industry in Minnesota. It's hard to know exactly how big, because a lot of it happens kind of informally. People go out into the woods, harvest, they take their harvest directly to buyers, and can be hard to track exactly how much economic activity happens in the industry, but there are a couple of very big producers right down here north of the Twin Cities, the Mickman Brothers Enterprise up, I think it's in Ham Lake, Andover, somewhere right around there, buys a ton of just absolutely a huge amount of boughs and turns them into reefs, and a lot of other companies do that around the state as well. For those interested, and now is the time of year, we do have good information. Julie and some of her colleagues up in Grand Rapids have put out a publication a couple of years ago about how to do it sustainably. You know, you don't want to go out and strip all the branches off of a tree. You want to cut just a few boughs here and a few boughs there from throughout that tree so that it regenerates. And in fact, if you do it right, it'll produce more in future years, not less. You don't want to harm the growth of that tree. It is an important industry in Minnesota and also just a fun way to, as we were saying before, just a fun way to get out into your woods. And so whether you want to do that to make some money or whether you want to do it to make something you can share with your friends and family or just hang on the front of your house or cabin, it's a good way to go.
And Eli, finally, I just want to reiterate one reason we always mention the discussion board is that the My Minnesota Woods is a two-way information source for anyone who wants to know things about Minnesota forests and trees. And once again, tell people how they can talk to foresters around the state and get good advice or answers to their questions.
It's not just talking to foresters. In fact, it's not really an ask the expert, although often when folks post questions, they do get answers from professionals. But it's one where we really try to encourage folks, and people are doing it, to get online and not only ask questions but also help answer them and share what they know. Because folks who own land and who use their land have an awful lot of experience and an awful lot of knowledge that they can share. And we know from research and just from talking to landowners that peers and other landowners are often, you know, one of the best sources of information. So one of the preferred ways that landowners get information. So we like to think of the discussion board not just as an ask the expert, but as a way for landowners to have this two-way or multi-way exchange. So anyone can go on there. You do need to register. We had a little bit of problem with spam. So if you want to post something, you'll have to click register. All you have to do is put in an email address and make up a password. It won't ask you anything more than that. And then you can post anything you want to the discussion board and see what you get back. It really is the most popular page on our site. We get more hits on the discussion board than we do on any other page except the home page. And so people like it, and I would really encourage folks to go online, just look for discussion board on the left side of the page, and have at it.
Eli Sagor is a forester and University of Minnesota Extension educator. We check in with Eli every month to find out what's new at the website myminnesotawoods.org. And the Forest Stewardship Program helps private landowners in northern Minnesota plan a timber harvest, improve habitat, and address insect and disease problems. A professional forester will meet with you and help create a forest management plan based on your goals. Foresters can identify programs that may be able to help with some of the costs of carrying out your plan. For more information, call KAXE 218-326-1234. And there are nature pictures and archives of interviews on the phenology page, and that's at our website, kaxe.org. You can also get real-time nature updates from John Latimer throughout the week. The Phenology Show and Phenology Plus is a multimedia experience at kaxe.org. That's Phenology Plus for this Tuesday evening. I'm Scott Hall with John Latimer. Thanks for listening.